This is Jim Lowe, and here we go, taking off on an Air Force Reserve sound flight. Jazz at its best with pianist Elliot Lawrence and the Sound Flight All-Stars. Our special guest, the distaff genius of jazz guitar, Mary Osborne on Sound Flight. Hi, Elliot. Hello, gang.
Hey, Jim.
Mary Osborne, I'd kiss your hand, madame, except your guitar seems to be keeping us apart.
I'll take a rain check, Jim.
You know, women are mighty rare here on Sound Flight, but then Mary Osborne's a mighty rare woman. Housewife, mother, jazz star extraordinaire. How many children do you have, Mary?
Just two, Jim, plus a guitar.
Well, then paddle that baby and let's hear it wail.
You're listening to the San Joaquin Sound Podcast, a podcast about music in Bakersfield and the surrounding San Joaquin Valley. I'm your host, AJ Rodriguez. This episode is going to be about jazz, and we're going to talk about Mary Osborne. And today, I'm going to interview Paul Kearley, who was one of Mary Osborne's students, and he knows way more about jazz than I do.
Yeah, I'm Paul Kearley. I've been playing guitar since I was a kid, playing in rock bands and country bands and jazz bands. I teach right now up at Bakersfield College. I teach the beginning guitar class, and I teach the basically like the jazz guitar music majors that are up there. Let me see. I'm trying to remember when I met Mary Osborne. My mom knew of her. She was with all her friends in town. She knew that there's this really great guitar player, Mary, in town. And I had had lessons when I started, did that for a few years, and then wasn't taking lessons anymore, just kind of teaching myself. And so she got in touch with Mary Osborne at her studio and took me over, and I just started taking lessons. This was probably in high school, probably like early 80s. And I think I took lessons from her about 2 years doing that, and basically just started trying to figure out jazz a little bit. And I think I had some friends that were listening to jazz a lot, so I kind of got interested in that towards the end of high school, like mid-80s or so. But I think that's the way I was introduced to her. My mom just like knew there's this great guitar player in town, and I should take lessons from her. So yeah.
That's awesome. We're going to move to talk about Mary Osborne as a child. She was born in Epping, North Dakota on July 17th to Alvin Osborne and Estella Rogers Osborne. Her mother sang and played the guitar, and her father played violins. He also made his own violins himself. He had a barber shop, and he used that as a place for local musicians to gather and play music. He was the band leader of a ragtime band. In 1991, she told the New York Times, "I thought everybody was a musician until I was 11 years old. We had a large family, and everybody could play an instrument, but nobody intended to be a musician. They tell me one time they found me sitting at the piano picking out tunes. I was 2 or 3 or something. My dad says, I think I finally got myself a musician. From then on, he just doted on me. He brought me every string instrument." She was a musical prodigy and a multi-instrumentalist. She tap danced, played piano, violin, banjo, ukulele, and even sang. And from age 10, she had her own radio show all the way up until age 15. When she was 9, she got her very first guitar. She stated, "When I picked that first guitar, that was it. I knew that's what I wanted to play the rest of my life." She played, quote, "country music, only we didn't just call it country then, we called it hillbilly." She was learning jazz and playing jazz violin. She listened to every 78 jazz record that she could find. She especially liked Django Reinhardt, Eddie Lang, and Dick McDonough. So do you know anything more about those artists?
Just Django Reinhardt. I listened to him a little bit. But yeah, he was that early jazz in the 30s, but he was European. So this was jazz happening over in France, which was a little different kind of vibe to it. Had more like a classical sort of bent to it, but it was very much about jazz, about improvising. So yeah, Django's stuff was really interesting.
And at this time, it's all acoustic, right? Electric guitars hadn't taken over.
Right, yeah.
A little bit later, in 1939, Mary Osborne went to see the Al Trent Sextet at a club called The Dome in Bismarck, North Dakota. Charlie Christian was playing with the band, and his performance absolutely blew her mind. She told the New York Times, "The only electric guitar I knew of was the Hawaiian guitar. I'd listen to the jazz guitarist all the times, but they all played acoustic. But here was Charlie Christian playing Django Reinhardt's St. Louis Blues note for note, but with an electric guitar. It was the most startling thing I'd ever heard." After the show, she approached Charlie and said, "I heard you play Django's chorus on St. Louis Blues." Charlie Christian was excited that she recognized this and invited her to jam, teaching her some jazz guitar, and he became a mentor to her. He unfortunately died of tuberculosis when he was 25 in 1942, but until then, they had kept in touch. As far as Charlie Christian, can you explain the significance of him to jazz guitar?
Yeah, I guess, I guess going back to that idea of like the, she's talking about the Hawaiian guitar, there was the lap steel was what some companies were making. It was electric guitar, but it was a lap steel. And apparently Charlie Christian wanted to be louder when he's playing with a big band, so he had somebody put a pickup from a lap steel into his regular acoustic guitar. So that's kind of how that first came about from what I hear. As far as his influence, I mean, the guitar with a big band, any kind of a large ensemble, they would be playing rhythm, and it wasn't very loud acoustically. So when you put a pickup in it, you could solo, and people would hear you. You sound, you know, like a trombone or like a saxophone or something. You can be just as loud. So that meant that guitar players could be a lead voice all of a sudden. So that's huge.
Yeah. Mary Osborne said, "Charlie Christian came out with guitar jazz solos, so great with that sound and everything, phrased like a horn. I knew I wanted to do that, and I thought I might be able to." So after this, she went out and she bought an $85 Gibson ES-150, just like Charlie Christian played. ES stood for Electric Spanish.
Right, yeah.
It was a hollow body guitar. It had F holes, just like a violin. There were no cutaways, and it had a bar pickup, which was a huge improvement over the previous piezo pickups. She even paid a friend $45 to build her an amplifier. And that's when she joined a trio led by Winifred McDonald. They had a lot of success and toured all around, but when the band was playing in New York City, all three women each met someone that they would marry, and the band ended up breaking up. And Mary Osborne married Ralph Scafidi in 1942, who was a jazz trumpeter who was an incredible player himself. Did you ever meet Ralph?
Yes, I probably, just in passing, I probably met him when I was at lessons. I would see him at the house, and I probably saw a big band show or two with him playing in it.
Nice.
So yeah.
So this was the start of her New York era. She was playing on 52nd Street, and she was playing often at the Village Vanguard in the 40s. Can you talk a little bit about this era of jazz?
What's going on in the 40s? That's like the big band stuff is happening, but
I think swing.
Yeah, swing is coming along. It's music to dance to. So they were doing that, and I'm trying to think. The Village Vanguard. I've had a couple people told me that they went to New York, and there's a poster of her still there. You go down the stairs, and right there at the bottom of the stairs, there's a poster of Mary Osborne. When she played, actually, I think she went back and played in the late 80s and early 90s.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah. So there's a poster of her there that you could still see, or at least a few years ago, it was still there. So, yeah.
Vintage Guitar Magazine said her swinging style earned her confirmation as one of the early architects of R&B and rock and roll. She's often described as a swing guitarist. Could you explain what swing is, especially for someone who might not know about jazz?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of... Swing is when you have a bounce to it. Like if you... Technically, swing is like a... like if you played something straight, just a regular beat. It's like one and two and three and four and one and two and three and four and one and two and three and four. Swing is when you kind of have this like kind of bounce to it, like a little... there's like a pause between the eighth note. So it's like one and two and three, and four, and one, and two, and three, and four. So swing would have like a little kind of bounce to it. Do, 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 do. But like a good way to think. Yeah, you think of old like big band stuff where it's like the Benny Goodman and Glenn Miller things, like In the Mood and that kind of stuff. It has a certain bounce to it, basically.
So she led her own trio with Sanford Gold and Frenchie Caillat, and eventually pianist Jack Police joined. She said, "I love the way guitarist Bucky Pizzarelli describes the kind of thing we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
He calls it disguising jazz as hotel music." We recorded first for Signature Records and then Decca and their subsidiary Coral. On Decca, it was strictly commercial. I wanted people to like us and sell. So it seems like she considered her trio as really trying to make music that would sell, that was popular, that a lot of people would be able to listen to. But she's still performing in New York, sitting in with every single famous jazz musician that you could think of. Here is Hoodle Addle by the Mary Osborne Trio from 1946. This is Mary Osborne on vocals and guitar.
In Philadelphia, on a recent date, a certain guy sat down at the 88, and he played a tune that kinda made you wanna sing. But it had no words, all it had was swing. To somebody hollered, hoodle addle, hoodle addle, hoodle addle addle, hoodle addle, hoodle addle, hoodle addle. It just sort of happened more or less that way.
During this time, Osborne made friends with writer and promoter Leonard Feather. In 1945, Art Tatum, Coleman Hawkins, Dizzy Gillespie, and even more jazz musicians played in Philadelphia at the Academy of Music. Mary Osborne said, "Leonard Feather just urged me to go on stage, so I ended up sitting in, and I got this fantastic write-up in the Philadelphia papers the next day when I wasn't even supposed to be there. I looked in the archives for the Philadelphia Inquirer on November 21st, 1945, and they said, a surprise feature of the evening was Mary Osborne, attractive young guitarist, whose playing brought further cheers and whistles from the lively audience. She ended up performing on the Arthur Godfrey Show, the Ed Sullivan Show. She became a regular performer on Jack Sterling's New York radio show from 1952 to 1963, playing jazz with a quartet, with Elliot Lawrence as band leader, and that was playing jazz live on the radio. And she was also busy in her home life. She had three children during this time and even recorded her first album, A Girl and Her Guitar, when she was pregnant with her third. It has pianist Tommy Flanagan, rhythm guitarist Danny Barker, bassist Tommy Potter, and drummer Papa Joe Jones. What did you think of that album?
I like it. I've listened to that a little bit. I can't remember if I actually have the physical album.
It's pretty rare now. Yeah. It goes for a lot of money.
Yeah,
it is hard to find. All of her LPs are.
Yeah, I think my mom may have just got it a little while ago, but you can listen to it. You can listen to a lot of the tracks on YouTube and Spotify and stuff. But yeah, it's great. Like, the guitar sounds great. It's really interesting. It's, like you mentioned, this is kind of like early sort of R&B rock and roll, maybe, sort of leading to that. It's like her sound was had a little bit of a drive to it, like not like distortion you would say, but like a little bit like an edge to it, which is kind of that precursor of like R&B and rock and roll. And when you listen to them, it's like, man, that's a really great sound. It's probably just an amp turned up really loud is what's going on. So
yeah, it sounds really clear for being an older recording, for sure. A modern review of the album in Guitar Player magazine said, "This is an essential work from an essential swing guitarist whose badass Charlie Christian-esque style is ripe for rediscovery. She occasionally slips and slides like a playful Les Paul, with a hard-hitting Mickey Baker edge and a Charlie Christian aesthetic hovering over it. So don't expect gentle utterances. Mary Osborne was a badass, and she's at her best on A Girl and Her Guitar." And that does track with what you were saying. It had an edge to it.
Yeah.
This is How High the Moon from 1959. Thank you. In 1962, she said, "I became bored with my playing and with music in general." She decided to try something new by studying Spanish classical guitar. She said, "It was a thrill to study classical techniques. I thought, look at this, there's so much more. And my teacher, Alberto Valdez Blaine, was wonderful. So now I'm practicing 2 hours every day with no pick. I knew my real strength lies in what I do, jazz, and that classical could never be my forte. But it was a beautiful music and made me hear so much more. And when I started to learn the right hand finger technique, I started to play pop and jazz songs with my fingers. So it really aided my development as a musician and a guitar player." Alberto Valdez Blaine was Andres Segovia's student.
Okay, yeah.
And he was pretty much the father of classical guitar.
Yeah, Andres Segovia, kind of in the early 1900s, I guess, brought forward like a resurgence of classical guitar as a solo instrument. Basically, you do like concerts with the classical guitar. It had been popular in the early, mid-1800s and sort of fallen out of fashion, I guess, in the late 1800s. But he brought it back and started performing. He was transcribing a lot of music that older composers like Bach and Scarlatti had written for other instruments like the cello or the lute or for harpsichord, and he transcribed them for guitar, and he was playing them and performing them, and it became really popular at it. So that kind of led to a resurgence of an interest in classical guitar. So yeah, he was the godfather of modern classical guitar, you could say. Yeah.
Yeah, and people didn't even realize that you could play these classical pieces on a guitar.
Yeah.
Or it would sound so good.
Yeah.
I think it's important to note that in 1981, Mary Osborne told the New York Times, "There's nothing unusual about women being musicians. In the 40s, when I came to New York, Billy Rogers, who played trumpet in Woody Herman's band, and Dardanelle, the pianist and singer, and I were just musicians. No one ever wrote about a girl guitar player. I got my jobs because I played and sang, not for that." So she wasn't just good for a girl. There's no qualifier necessary. She was an incredible guitar player, period. We talk about her playing with the greats, but she was one of the greats.
Yeah, definitely. I guess going back to the idea of the classical guitar, that was one of the big things when I was taking lessons from her. Is that I started with a little bit of a jazz kind of bent. Like I took lessons from her in high school for a little bit, for about a year or two. Then I went to Bakersfield College, and then when I went to Cal State, I took lessons from her again through the college for two more years. And at that point, she was teaching me like classical technique, basically, and it was real, real big. It was like all finger style, right hand exercises, and I had started off playing like finger style and then started using a pick probably in high school. And the finger style always felt more natural to me. I liked that a lot. But having her like show me all these things, how to play finger style and all these exercises and doing classical music, it was really great. It helped my technique a lot, helped me grow as a musician, I think, a lot. So, but it's neat to I guess just mention that that's what she did. She studied classical guitar for a while. And I didn't know she was bored with what she was doing. She's like, I'll do something different. That's a great thing to do if you're playing. You should always try to be growing, so that's great.
Yeah. Now we get to the part where we get to Bakersfield. In September of 1967, Phil Brenner from Mosrite Guitar Company called Ralph Scafidi and offered him a job. Mosrite is a legendary guitar company from right here in Bakersfield. Glenn Campbell, Buck Owens, and the Ventures were all using Mosrites at the time. Scafidi and Osborne were both excited to play music on the West Coast. They had a good career in New York City and touring all over, that it was exciting for them to come here. Ralph moved to start work in November of 1967, and Mary and the children joined him in July 1968. Their son, Ralph Scafidi Jr., explained, "Mosrite had a lot of internal management problems, and it became apparent that the company wasn't functioning as well as Dad had been led to believe. In 69, Mosrite filed for bankruptcy. But Bakersfield's Mosrite guitars continue to be legendary in music. Jimi Hendrix, Johnny Ramone, Kurt Cobain, The Dead Kennedys' East Bay Ray, Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains, and Kevin Shields from My Bloody Valentine all use Mosrite guitars, along with a lot of other country artists that were copying the sound from the 60s, including also some surf guitars that are copying the way that the Ventures sounded. 1 week after Mosrite went under, Ralph formed Rozak Electronics, which I had an amp from them when I was a kid that I must have got off the classifieds or Craigslist or something. I never knew that it was from there.
That was one of his amps. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, Rozak. The whole company was in a single warehouse on East Brundage Lane, according to evexdatabase.com. It wasn't bigger than 40 by 20 yards. They did everything there, and they even had a lifetime guarantee, so if something went wrong, they would repair it. They made fuzz boxes called the New Fuzz, and their most popular was another pedal called the New Wah pedal. And it was a wah pedal, and according to Vintage Guitar Magazine, that was the pedal that was used in Isaac Hayes' Shaft.
Oh, okay.
So I thought that was really cool. After that went out of business, Mary and Ralph had the Osborne Guitar Company and Osborne Sound Labs. They made guitars, they made amps and PAs, and Mary Osborne would come in and test every amp herself before they sent it out.
Yeah, I remember when I took lessons and she had her Osborne amp in the corner. I thought, wow, that's your amp. So yeah, that's our company. It's like, wow.
Yeah, it's really cool. They had these companies making electronics here. They're probably still floating around Bakersfield. So they really tried to make Bakersfield a home for jazz. In October 1968, the headline on the Bakersfield Californian read, "Immigrants from East Coast, Ardent Bakersfield Boosters." Some of the places that, according to the Californian, in 1969, they played at the Albert Good Auditorium at the fairgrounds for the Italian Heritage Association, Freddie's Skyway House by the airport for the New Year's Eve celebration, and at the Howdy House at the corner of California and Oak Street in 1970. She also played at the March of Dimes Telerama broadcast from the Civic Auditorium in 1971. A lot of times she performed with the Jack Monin Orchestra, and they had a regular gig playing at the Bakersfield Hilton Inn. She also played in a jazz trio with Danny Murillo on drums and Archie Rader on bass at the Broadway in Valley Plaza to raise money for the Kern Philharmonic Orchestra. In 1976, she performed at the Jazz Jam for Cal State Bakersfield at the Civic Auditorium with her group Mary Osborne and Friends. Do you remember when the first time you saw her play was?
I'm trying to think if it was... It was either at Cal State, they would do their coffee houses, and she did a coffee house probably in like the late 80s. I either saw her there. I probably saw her there at the coffee house, and she was always just really cool. It was like, it looked so easy. She was having a great time. She's smiling. This is like, I don't know, just like she was just cool. So I think I saw her there, and then there was a place called the Blue Note off of like Stein and White Lane out in that area over there.
Yeah, there was probably hundreds, if not thousands, of gigs that were not in the Bakersfield Californian.
Right.
Because she is performing all over whenever. There's no venue too small or venue too big.
Yeah.
In 1977, she appeared in a film called At the Top and appeared on the Today Show, and also recorded a live album for the Marion McPartland Halicon label, and that album was called Now's the Time. She even played at the grand opening at Stockdale Music in 1977.
Oh, wow.
This was located at 5474 California.
Yep.
And I only knew about the Stockdale location, I think.
Yeah, I used to go in the one that was on California before they moved over there, and I don't think I ever saw her there, but I think I knew that somebody had said something about her being in there or something. But yeah, that was the Fosbenders, and was it Ken Fosbender? I just found out, like, started the BC big band up in the 50s. He was a band director at BC. So just a little side note there.
Wow.
But that, yeah, I worked at Stockdale Music for a little while over when they were on Stockdale Highway.
I think I bought my first or second guitar pedal from there. It was like some multi-effects pedal, and everyone told me it sounds horrible, but I was so excited to have like 100 effects in one pedal because I didn't even know what anything was yet.
Yeah.
I still don't know, to be honest, but you know.
It's fun to experiment and have a bunch of things to do. Yeah,
Have that many effects, it was exciting. And it had an expression pedal on the side to control stuff that was fun.
Yeah.
In 1980, I found in the Bakersfield Californian a coupon for one free lesson at the Fine Arts Workshop, which was located on 212 Goodman. And if you were back then, you could have used that coupon to get a lesson from Mary Osborne for free.
Yeah, that's where I think I first met her. I remember that studio at Goodman. I think I went over there one time and met her, and then I started taking lessons at her house when she was teaching it at Christmas on Christmas Tree Lane. So,
wow.
Yeah, I just remembered that. That's right. Yeah, on Goodman Street. I probably went in there once or twice.
Yeah, when I was doing some research for this, I found out they lived on Christmas Tree Lane, which is very close to an apartment that I lived for very long. And I couldn't believe how I've driven past that over and over. Like, I couldn't believe it was right there. In 1981, she released her second album. And she only had two. She played on hundreds of albums, but this one was called Now and Then. It had some of her old recordings and some of her new recordings. It was for Stash Records. If you want to listen to it now, it is renamed A Memorial because it was re-released on CD after she passed away. Mm-hmm. She was performing all the time, and even in 1983, she performed with the LA 4 at the Bakersfield Inn, and she was performing regularly at the Starlight Ballroom with Ralph Scafidi and the 17-piece Starlight Orchestra. Did you go to the first jazz festival in 1987?
Yes, I'm sure I did. The first one was like this kind of dual thing with Dizzy Gillespie at BC and then something going on at Cal State, too. And so I saw that, and I don't remember if that was the first one or the next year was the first one. But yeah, I went to every one for the first like 10 years there. Did she perform at that one? Or
yeah.
Yeah.
So in 1987, there was the first Bakersfield Jazz Festival, mm-hmm. which was run by Doug Davis, who is another really important person for the history of Bakersfield jazz. But they also did a show at Bakersfield College, like you said, before this festival. So it was kind of like you had two opportunities to see Dizzy Gillespie.
Yeah.
And in that week, the Kern County Board of Supervisors honored Mary Osborne and proclaimed that week Jazz Week in Kern County.
Right on, yeah.
And I read a story in the Californian that Dizzy Gillespie went to cash his check at the bank and they asked him for ID. And what he did was he just pulled out his trumpet and he puffed out his cheeks.
Yeah.
And I think that was enough for them to get him to cash it.
Yeah.
In 1990, she played the Playboy Jazz Festival, and she reportedly stole the show, and a lot of famous people played on there, including Pat Metheny, who I think, if I remember, is one of your favorite guitarists.
Yeah, he's probably my favorite guitar player. I've got more Pat Metheny albums than anybody. Yeah.
So you have your teacher and your hero on stage.
Yeah.
Right there. So during this time, for years, she was struggling with leukemia, but she kept playing music, and she kind of kept it a bit quiet, and she's still playing all these shows. She played more shows. She returned to New York and played a couple weeks there at the Village Vanguard, and the last appearance of the Mary Osborne Trio was her and her sons, Pete on bass and Ralph Jr. on the drums. And that was her last appearance as the Mary Osborne Trio, which I thought was really powerful.
Yeah, that's poignant.
Mary Osborne is living proof that it's smart to study with the right teachers. She got her inspiration from the great pioneer of modern jazz guitar, Charlie Christian, and she's been swinging ever since.
We've talked a lot about her career as a musician, but another thing that's really important is that she was an incredible guitar teacher, and she had so many students that I can't even figure out how many there are. She taught in Bakersfield at places like the Y, Our Lady of Perpetual Help, and Garces Memorial High School, including in 1977, she was teaching beginning guitar and intermediate guitar at Bakersfield College. That's what you do, right?
That's what I'm doing now, yeah. That's neat to be able to kind of be up there doing what so many really great guitar players have already done, being up there. Carl Haas and Mary Osborne, and yeah, that's what I do now, though.
Yeah. She taught at CSUB from 1982 to 1991. What was her teaching style?
She was pretty laid back. She would give you something to do, and, you know, you'd go home and you'd practice it, and you come back and she'd just say, play it for me. And she'd sit there and listen, and you'd play your exercises or songs that you were working on. She liked to just talk about stuff. I mean, she had me playing things, but I would ask her about a piece of music and she would know something about the composer, or she would know something about how it was written, because she'd been around a long time. She would talk and tell me like little stories about people you mentioned. I think, oh, is it Lorenzo Almeida, classical guitar player, told me about, like, you know, working with him and the classical. He's like this kind of classical sort of jazz guitar player. But yeah, just stories about things that she did, or stories about music, or just talk about music. So, but yeah, I guess laid back would be the way to say it. She'd like to just sit and play music, and we would play together a little. She would often just have me play. I remember her sitting one time and just saying, what do you like to play? I don't know. Just play me something. This is like, here, play me something. Let me hear what you're doing. No, okay. So yeah, so it was really nice. She was very encouraging that way, I think. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Yeah, I mean, that was it, basically. Like, there was an emphasis on, like, classical music and classical technique, because that's what I had to do at Cal State.
Yeah.
Earlier on when I was, I took lessons from her for a couple years in high school. And that's what we were more, she was showing me stuff about jazz then, you know, just like how to play and how to, you know, talk about how to swing. And then later on at Cal State, that's when I was more into a classical kind of realm, because that's what the curriculum was, exactly, yeah. But again, yeah, she would tell me stuff, she would show me things, she would have me play it. And again, just very laid back, and, you know, it was nice. I remember asking her about a solo piece or something, and she says, here. And she just handed me a piece of music, says, go figure that out. Just, it's up to you. You have to figure out how to do this. I'm like, okay. Took it home and practiced it. Came back. Is this right? Yeah, here, work on this. And she'd show me things. Yeah, it's insisted that I learn things. So, like, I would practice stuff. If you want to learn something, here, take this piece of music, go practice it, come back, show me what you can do. Okay.
That's awesome. You know, she left a really great legacy. After she passed away, the Jazz Fest did a memorial for her. Not only did she, of course, have an obituary in the Bakersfield Californian, but the New York Times had an obituary for her because she was so important.
Wow. Yeah.
She was inducted to the Bakersfield Music Hall of Fame in 2017, but she was also inducted into the North Dakota Hall of Fame, which is where she was born. So there's a lot of people in different communities that are so proud of her being a part of them. She's credited in over 100 different recordings. She played anywhere she could, and she was happy to share her knowledge with the world.
Well, I was thinking, it was really neat when, like, YouTube started happening like 10, 15 years ago, and start to look up things about, I was like, I wonder if Mary Osborne's on here. And I would find there's plenty of videos of her playing back in the 50s and 60s that people have uploaded. And you'd see her playing a concert on a TV show with Billie Holiday. And it's just, yeah, she played with a lot of great people.
Yeah. In her book, Stormy Weather, The Music and Lives of a Century of Jazz Woman, Linda Dahl calls her the first lady of jazz guitar. In many other places, she's referred to as the queen of jazz guitar. She was credited on over 100 different albums or singles. She played with Joe Venucci, Dizzy Gillespie, Art Tatum, Coleman Hawkins, Thelonious Monk, Mercer Ellington, Burl Booker, Merle Torn, Louis Armstrong, the Andrews Sisters, Ethel Waters, the Ames Brothers, and Mary Lou Williams, and many, many others. Mary Osborne's Memorial Scholarship was started in 1996. The very first recipient was Jim Scully, and he's taught at CSUB for many years. Another was Kyle Burnham, who teaches at BC.
Mm-hmm.
He told the Californian in 2016, "The first time I met her at CSUB, we had a jam session. I couldn't believe she was interested in giving her time just to play a little jazz with me. She was very encouraging, even though I was nowhere near her level of musicianship at the time. Her willingness to share her time and knowledge has helped shape my teaching philosophy. I make it a priority with my students whenever possible." She left a legacy of music education that means her legacy will live on in countless students all around the world.
Yeah, that's what I always like when you took the guitar class, I always bring up Mary Osborne and how great she was and try to tell all my students, go out and listen to some Mary Osborne stuff. And yeah, that's great about Kyle. He's a really good teacher. I'm up there teaching with him at BC, and he hangs out with his kids and shows them how to try this. And he's very, just like you said, he's laid back, and he tries to just help everybody out. He's a really good teacher. So,
yeah, and these are just names that I recognize. There were a bunch of other names. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that the way that she taught, that it's carried on. When I think back to taking Intro to Guitar with you, you did a lot of the things that she did. And you were very laid back, but you were very excited to show us about so many different guitars. I remember whenever you talked about a new guitarist, every week or every time we had a lesson, you would put another guitarist on the board, but then you would play their stuff.
I try to play like them or something, yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like I played guitar for a long time before. I'm not very good. I want to learn more. Don't get me wrong. I just like playing. But a lot of the other students were brand new. And so I remember you played Rumble by Link Wray.
Right.
And that was just, the other kids seemed just as amazed by that as when you played Van Halen's Eruption.
Yeah.
But to me, I was like looking around, oh my gosh. Yeah. It was just so cool to hear you ripping these different solos. And it would just be, you know, you look the same. You looked relaxed and having fun, yeah, as Mary Osborne does when you watch on YouTube. Her, she just looks so relaxed and so like she belongs there. Like that's her home.
Well, it's a lot of fun. It's always like a pleasure to me to like show somebody something. There's this world of music out there. There's all these great guitar players. And I mean, it's hard to listen to all of it, but it's like you should go out and check out some of these really great musicians. So it's always exciting to me to like show somebody a new guitar player. Because I remember when I was young and my friends would be like, "Hey, have you heard this guy? Have you heard this?" And I'd listen to some new music. And I'd be like, "Whoa, what is that?" And it's just a great feeling to discover something new musically like that. So hopefully I want to do that with my students. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about some local musicians in the jazz world that you think people should go out and listen to.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of really good musicians here in Bakersfield, keeping jazz alive. You could actually, I guess, go down to the jazz workshop on Tuesday nights. Steve Eisen started that like more than 15 years ago, and that's been going strong like every week on Tuesday nights. It's at the Petroleum Club or the Sundale Country Club down there near West High, 6:30 to about 9:30. But they have like a beginning jam for like high school or college students at the beginning. And there's like a featured artist. I play down there occasionally here and there. And then there's like a jam afterwards, like a professional jam afterwards for about 45 minutes, anybody that's playing. And I'm playing with Mike Rainey on saxophone in a month, I'll be playing with him. But I play with, Kyle Burnham, Chris Tyner up at BC. We do a lot of stuff together. Chris Tyner's doing some great stuff musically. He's all about new music and kind of branching out and trying different things. He's touring around the West Coast. He was back up in San Francisco just last week, I think. But he's all over the place. He's doing really good stuff. So I was thinking Isaiah Morfin on saxophone, really good. My friends at the Bakersfield Music Lessons down on 28th and F Street, Jay Smith. He's a great piano player. He's got the Jay Smith group. He's out playing a lot. You see him around town. And he does a nice like kind of blend of like jazz, R&B. He'll make like jazz arrangements of R&B tunes and R&B arrangements of jazz tunes. So he's mixing it up a lot. And Paul Perez that plays with him, he's probably one of the best saxophone players. I mean, definitely in Bakersfield.
Nice.
Best saxophone players around. I mean, he's really good. He's like an A-list player. And we're lucky to have him here in Bakersfield. But
he plays with Mento Buru?
He plays with Mento Buru too, yeah, with Jay Smith and Mento Buru, and does his own thing here and there, just like doing jazz gigs around town. But oh, yeah, there's Brendan Coyle. He's a very good young guitar player. He does really well. He's going to Cal Arts right now, but he's still around town playing a little bit. Yeah, lots of good stuff going on in town, though, still.
Thank you so much for the interview. We'll leave off with Love You Madly from 1981. Mary Osborne is on guitar and vocals.
The good things come to those who wait. So just relax and wait for fate to let me see the day you'll say to me, I love you madly. I love you madly.